to episode 11 in the series of podcasts featuring university registrars talking about stuff. This time I'm talking to the registrar and secretary at the University of Brighton, Stephen Duddridge, about his career, including at the University of Nottingham, the response to the crisis at all levels of his university, and the tremendous pride in the ways all groups of staff have stepped up, as well as the need for new ways of working, and for administrative agility in particular. The likelihood of the government support package coming good is explored, together with the profile of higher education in the media and the possible rehabilitation of the expert in public life. We also discuss streamlining processes and ensuring consistent implementation, the likely legacy of the crisis in terms of staff anxieties as we move into the new normal, as well as planning for the first post-pandemic graduations. I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome everyone, and it's my great pleasure today to be talking to Stephen Duddridge. Stephen is Registrar and Secretary, I think that's the correct title, at the University of Brighton. Now, Stephen and I go back a long way, but I do want to hear from him about his career, not just in relation to me, but himself, and how he ended up at the University of Brighton. Stephen, welcome. Do tell us about your career.
Thank you, Paul. Very good to be talking to you. So where do I start in terms of my career? I think the thing that's perhaps worth noting is that in regard to my student life and the first 22 years of working in higher education, I was what you'd describe as a lifer at the University of Nottingham. So I studied at the university and found my way back working there in 1994 in the Faculty of Medicine. And that was a fantastic introduction to working in higher education, because from day one, I worked with academic staff and indeed clinical academic staff. And I think that of all of the things that stick with me over the years of changing different jobs within Nottingham and now spending time in Brighton, it's the fact that those early days working with academics and working in the sort of front line of provision for students has really sort of underpinned the way I've approached everything else I've done since then. They were a very happy 4.5 years at the medical school in Nottingham before I moved into the centre of the registrar's department, and a series of changes within the institution, the growth of the sector, a change in the management structures led me to work in our academic schools, and also then a return to the registrar's department during your time as registrar in a division of student operations and support, which eventually led to me ending my time at the university as deputy registrar. So in 2016, I was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to take on the role at Brighton. And it's been a really empowering and energizing 3.5 years since then, working with some great colleagues in a very different part of the sector to the University of Nottingham in terms of a variety of different things. And, you know, it's been a great learning curve, a great learning experience, and fascinating to encounter a different level of sort of creativity in regard to some of the thinking, but also creativity as far as some of our students are concerned. So, for example, we have an art school, which is, you know, hugely regarded, and a series of differences in the portfolio that has been, you know, fascinating and really sort of energizing for me to familiarize myself with that.
And I'm just to reinforce that, I mean, I did very much enjoy working with you and was sorry to see you go, but delighted that you've really been thriving at the University of Brighton. And that, obviously, that medical school experience is still relevant today because of the Brighton Sussex Medical School. And presumably, they, you know, you've had some significant involvement there as far as the current crisis is concerned.
Yes, as an institution, the situation that we're in at the moment has, I suppose, shown higher education in all its, you know, multifaceted ways, whether it's to do with colleagues producing PPE or other material, whether it's to do with our engagement with our local authority, our local community, and then really in terms of the sharp end of the health service, the mobilization of our health sciences students and our students in the Brighton and Sussex Medical School, to allow them to contribute to this period and our response to it as a society as quickly as possible. As you say, the experience from Nottingham, from, you know, 20 plus years ago, is still relevant today in terms of engaging with the medical school that we have. But it's been a very satisfying and I would say, you know, something that has been a source of great pride to all of us, that our health sciences and medical students have responded so admirably.
Yeah, it's been one of those great things to see the way that across the sector, you know, particularly those in medical schools, schools of health sciences, etc., have really stepped up. But also, you know, staff across universities have contributed, not just in terms of, you know, research and, you know, contributing their expertise, but also the kind of volunteering at every part of the institution. It's been terrific to see. And, you know, kind of a really positive change in the way that I think universities have been, you know, represented in the public eye as well.
I hope so. I think that one of the notable aspects of the media coverage has been really to showcase the value of an impact, even in very short-term ways of research, and the essence of an institution as being research-led, research-informed, however, you know, you'd wish to describe it, but also the fact that, you know, a huge level of expertise sits within our institutions. And, you know, after a few years where, let's face it, the notion of listening to experts hasn't actually been in vogue, I think it's been a really important thing to note, that the value of the, you know, the scientific input, you know, has been at the front and centre of this, the response our government and our society has had to this.
I think that's absolutely right. Of course, one of the slight downsides to that is now you've got our academics playing out their arguments in public in a way that they perhaps, you know, haven't always been doing. But it is nevertheless really indicative of the fact that, you know, in so many respects, we are at the front and centre of what's going on in the country, particularly in the, you know, the challenges we're facing with COVID-19, which is, you know, absolutely vital. And it does, as you say, reinforce the value of universities to society.
Absolutely. And I think we've just really got to hope that that, you know, our perception as we're sort of reflecting on it right now is shared by others and is something that is sustained. But I think that, you know, I'd be hopeful that the way in which we're interpreting this is accurate.
Yeah, definitely. What we're facing a position now where the government has indicated that we're, you know, we're getting some support to tide universities over, but I think that, you know, it is only some support, and it falls short of what I think many institutions were hoping for. But it does feel to me that, you know, for all parts of the sector, these are, you know, more challenging times than we've, you know, we've ever really seen before, certainly in you know, kind of the memory of those currently working. And, you know, I've worked in the sector even longer than you have. And when I started working, there were, you know, there were people who were still
remembered the effects of the cuts in the early 80s. And this seems to me to be, you know, on a scale far more significant than that. And I do think it, you know, it represents a, you know, a real long-term challenge to our sector, which I do hope, you know, the government does actually realise in the light of the contributions that we're making, actually, you know, we do really need some more support.
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. I think the thing that is of particular note now, though, you know, compared to, say, a period like the early 80s, is the sheer scale of the sector, the size of it in, you know, comparison to that period, you know, it is enormous. And therefore, you know, the impact that institutions and the sector as a whole, you know, is facing is equally sort of magnified, really. I think what the government has focused on so far, and I say so far with a note of optimism in there about the fact that I think that other things have to be considered in time, is very sort of short term in terms of its focus. So
yeah,
the decisions around stabilizing the admissions cycle, and also the front loading of the tuition fee, really, you know, they're short term measures to support in some cases cash flow, but we do still need to be in a position where we are, of course, welcoming students in the autumn, but also reflecting on the fact that, notwithstanding the fact that tuition fee payments may be front-loaded and QR funding may be directed towards particular institutions, there is still going to be a significant gap in university finances, as institutions have reported and been very public about in the media over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, it does, well, I'll come back to that maybe in a bit, but it does make me think that nevertheless, that we should be confident about our ability to survive, you know, this most challenging of time. Because I think the way in which universities responded to, you know, the period, you know, just before and leading up to and then right after the lockdown was, you know, in my view, you know, genuinely remarkable. Because I mean, when we were, you know, together back in the days when you were in Nottingham, we faced our fair share of crises of one kind or another, and I, you know, big and small. And I was always amazed, you know, the extent to which the university community was able to come together, and people were able to, you know, suddenly, you know, kind of drop everything and rally around and find the right way through. But that's happened at, you know, unprecedented scale and pace, institutional level across the country, and it's been nothing short of remarkable. So that does give me a kind of sense of optimism that we would be able to, you know, somehow navigate these very rough waters ahead. But how did the kind of run up to the lockdown feel for you, given your experience of crisis management?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you reflect back on, you know, our time together, and you know, we know we dealt with you know, our fair share of difficult situations, and
more than our fair share, I think.
More than our fair share. I think you know, the first thing I'd want to say is really about the sort of pace, and I can't remember, you know, who I heard reference this in the media. You know, it's not an original observation from me, but it really chimed with me. It was the pace of decision making, as much as anything else, that stood out for me. We'd been monitoring the situation in China, you know, for many, many weeks, and had convened our incident response team, certainly from the start of February, in a way that saw us start to reflect on what we needed to do. But it was really the pace as we got closer to lockdown, and the adaptability and the ingenuity, and as I say, really the decision making that I think was astonishing, in terms of the fact that people were both willing very quickly to realize what needed to be done. And that meant communicating with large numbers of staff within the institution, communicating with students, and being very decisive, that actually there were certain things that we would be able to do, and there were certain things that we simply would not be able to contemplate or tolerate. And when I say tolerate, I don't mean that in a sort of a draconian sense. I just mean cope with.
Put up with it, yeah.
Put up with, indeed, in terms of our response. And I think that I've just been, so impressed by the colleagues I work with. I know, from my own experience that you'd have had, a super set of colleagues alongside you as well. I just think that the whole institution, at Brighton should just take an enormous amount of pride in what it's been able to do. And I think really, whilst I would, reference my colleagues in our information services team and the ingenuity of our estates operation, and the thought that's gone in from our academic services and student support in preparing the ground to support our students, really the greatest tribute has to go to our academic staff for that willingness to adapt, and the creativity that has just been something we've been able to showcase during this period in ensuring that we continue the learning experience for our students.
Yeah, I know. I like you. I've been genuinely awestruck by the way in which people have adapted so quickly to trying to ensure that the best online resources are provided for our students. I mean, it's not it's not a perfect solution. It's not what anyone would have designed, given much more time. But actually, it's been really, really impressive the way colleagues have stepped up. Couldn't agree with you more about the way in which academic colleagues have stepped up, and I've been hugely impressed by the way that's happened here at Nottingham too. But I've also been impressed with the way the colleagues, in particular in professional services, have adapted to what is a very different working arrangement for most, not all of them, but for many. And I wonder what thoughts you had on how that's likely to pan out in the longer term, because there are large parts of the university which have not traditionally adapted well to agile working of any kind, and yet we're all having to do it now. So do you think it will have a long-term impact on the way professional services are organised? Will be much more looking for that much greater agility in terms of working arrangements?
I think that there's a distinction to be drawn between I suppose the whole concept and notion of home working and flexible working, which of course has a very personal dimension to it, as well as a dimension in terms of our business operations continuity and resilience, and the fact that we've had to really confront certain circumstances and situations that have perhaps encouraged us to harmonize where we've tolerated difference in the past, make more consistent something where we've been inclined to think there are multiple ways of doing or interpreting things. And I think the great legacy of this will be in regard to that, harmonization and focus on consistency. I think there'll be more questions from colleagues, and colleagues will feel far more liberated in just asking, why on earth have we done it like that for so long? And why on earth have we perhaps had a very sort of institution-wide approach to a particular process apart from in this one area? Because, you know, I think we have been institutions, you know, I'm sure it's the case across most universities where, you know, we try to be accommodating and without, again, you know, sounding too draconian in regard to this. I think what we've all learned, and what I think my colleagues in professional services will feel empowered to do more of in the future, is to say, well, actually, there's, you know, a good reason for us doing this consistently. And I think that will be something that comes out of this.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I also think, though, and I mean, this is I've had a number of conversations with people both in Nottingham and elsewhere about this, the issue of empowerment, which I think is really important. And it has really come to the fore as something that has moved from, you know, perhaps an aspiration into reality, as we've, you know, had to operate in an environment where, you know, empowerment is the only actual way to get things done, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that what we've done in regard to our structures around our, you know, incident response business continuity arrangements is to set up a series of task teams to focus on different elements of our operations, whether they're to do with staff and student well-being, our sort of, you know, short-term resilience, our longer-term thinking, as well as the academic and regulatory strand of activity. And every institution will have found their own way based on their own culture and structures to do this. But in each of those task teams, and indeed in the sort of wider extended environment at the sort of incident response level, you know, colleagues from across teams, colleagues from, you know, at different levels within the institution have been involved. And I think that it's that sense of confidence that we've placed in staff to take decisions, to ensure that their voice is going to be heard and that they know their voice is going to be heard and respected, but also the cross-team working that has been fostered over this period of weeks that I think, again, is going to be, you know, frankly, you know, hugely important in maintaining as we face into what we were discussing a little bit earlier, is inevitably going to be an ongoing and very, very challenging time for the institution and all institutions.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And of course, one of the things as we're looking forward into, you know, we're talking in May, we're all thinking about the start of the next academic session. It looks very, very uncertain from where we're sitting now, about, you know, whether we'll be, you know, kind of opening, you know, be business as usual, as if that's possible anymore, but whether it'll be partly online and, you know, partly face to face, or whether we'll be, you know, fully socially distanced throughout. I mean, you know, we really, you know, or having different start dates for different cohorts of students, we really have no idea. But I just get the sense that it is going to be very, very different. And, you know, the campus experience for our students is, you know, however relaxed the requirements are from government now, is still going to be very, very different from what it was before. And we're all going to have to adapt every aspect of university life, from, you know, sport to accommodation to catering to what goes on in a classroom, is going to be different. And it's very difficult to plan for that, I think.
It is. We're naturally looking at different scenarios, and I think that I'm sure, like many institutions, you know, we're looking to devise a response for what could be a variety of different requirements and arrangements. I think that a huge amount is going to be determined by the arrangements the government expects in regard to social distancing. And I think that there will be a huge range of things that you've just referenced that we need to prepare for. I suppose in the longer term, I think that two things occur to me. One is, notwithstanding the fact that we hope any ongoing restrictions and social distancing will be things that will return to a more sort of normal sort of sense of life in time, there will be a legacy in terms of managing anxiety. And I think that's something we've got to take some real care around in regard to support for our staff, support for our students. The second thing that occurs to me, though, is that notwithstanding the scale of the change we're all faced with at the moment, and we're anticipating will have a long-term legacy when we get out of this, I don't think we should lose sight of the things that people will want to return to and preserve. There are things about the university experience that have proved to be remarkably resilient for many, many years. And I don't think we should underestimate the desire to actually return to normality at some point in the future. I think the big thing is going to be over the time. And as I say, the sort of managing that, transition back to more familiar times in a way that is sensitive to the, undoubted impact that colleagues and our students will still feel.
Yeah. So I noticed from your website, which I just happened to be looking at, there was you're announcing your virtual open days. And of course, lots of universities do that. But I suppose the question I was going to ask is, have you got any virtual graduations planned before we can get back to the normal pomp and ceremony of the traditional begowned graduation?
What we've been really pleased to be able to do is to actually now reach a point where we can confirm that we are able to hold a full range of ceremonies, social distancing and current government restrictions allowing, in February of 2021. And that's been a really important signal to be able to send to our student community and indeed our staff community. And if we are in a position where we are able to hold those ceremonies, and let's hope that we are in February of next year, I think, what a joyous set of occasions they'll be. But I think that one of the things that has been quite moving and impressive that I've been able to observe elsewhere, and particularly, obviously, Nottingham and the medical school on the One Show, was that virtual celebration. And I think it's another example of how people have just sought to be creative and innovative, and also perhaps it's a reminder of the journey that all of our students are on during their studies, and the fact that it is hugely important to celebrate their achievements and the success at the end of them.
That's absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. Stephen, on that note, we'll stop there. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to me. That was a real pleasure. Thank you very much indeed, and cheerio.
Thank you, Paul. Great to talk.
That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course. And if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until the next time.